Dit is een BNR-podcast.
Volt op vrijdag. Geert-Jan Haan.
We have reached our last and final country, starting with a C, the Czech Republic, which technically just changed its English name to Czechia.
You mean that place in Russia with all the problems?
No, that's Chechnya.
Didn't you say that was that thing on the Croatian flag?
No, that's the Czechie.
King me.
No, that's Checkers.
Bishop to C5?
No.
Welkom bij Volt op vrijdag, 29 maart 2024. Fijn dat je weer luistert naar een journalistieke podcastproject over de enige supranationale partij binnen Europa die toewerkt naar de Europese verkiezingen in juni 2024. Ik volg de komende maanden dus de pan-Europese beweging Volt. Dat doe ik met name in Nederland, met een aantal kopstukken. Beschouwen we de situatie in Europa. We doen dat dus ook een beetje met België en een beetje met Duitsland. Maar ik ben deze week in Tsjechië geweest en dat gaf me de gelegenheid om eens te gaan zitten met Adam Hruška. Adam is de communications co-lead van Volt Tsjechië. En we zaten op een bankje in Praag en hebben daar 20 minuten gesproken over hoe hij kijkt door een Tsjechische bril naar de Europese verkiezingen, naar Europa. Hij is ook defensie-expert. Dus dat was genoeg stof, ook tot nadenken voor jullie. Ik ben daarna met de European Sleeper, met de nieuwe nachttrein van Praag naar Brussel teruggereisd. En ben dus net weer terug in Nederland met een fikse verkoudheid. Excuus daarvoor. En ik hoop dat je met veel plezier gaat luisteren naar wat er allemaal zich in Tsjechië afspeelt. Hier komt het gesprek met Adam Hruška, die zichzelf nog een keer voorstelt.
Hi, I'm Adam Hruška. I'm a security researcher and researcher of food security and artificial intelligence agriculture. I'm a Volt member and in Volt I'm doing the co-lead of communication. So a lot of the external communication and the communication with media for Volt Czechia is my job.
So how much time do you spend weekly on Volt?
Yeah, I like to joke that I'm doing like half of the normal person's work. So I'm doing like 20-ish work hours.
And all the Volt members are doing that on a voluntary basis?
As far as for the Czech members, yes. We have one employee, but who's employed from the European level, so he's not an employee of Volt Czechia. And then there's like one other employee, she's doing like 12 hours a week, but it's like an external person, not a party member.
So thank you for having this conversation with me. We're here in the center of Prague. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about what we are seeing, where we are sitting right now? There's a little bit of wind, but it's a lovely spring day.
Yeah, it's quite warm today. We're just sitting in front of the Czech National Bank and in the middle of this somewhat busy square with a parking lot, which is somewhat sad because this part of the city should be more like the Dutch cities, filled with bike lanes instead of the parking lots.
And that tower over there, what's that?
Actually, I'm not sure about the name, but it's funny that it's still owned by the church, but they are lending it to a restaurant. So you can go there to a restaurant, which is like around, right underneath the bells.
Tell me a bit about how I see a European flag over there. How European is Czech Republic nowadays? Can I still say Czech Republic, by the way?
Yes, you can, but like the official names are Czechia and Czech Republic, but the Czechia is the more officially pushed because it makes more sense. Like nobody's saying French Republic, they're just saying France. So it's similar to this. And as far as for the Europeanization, I would say that the younger generations, approximately younger than 35, are quite pro-European, but since we had a history with the communism and with the Iron Curtain, a lot of the older generations are not so positively watching the European integration, since they see broader integration within the European space as something that reminds them of the communist regime.
Yeah, if you mentioned 35 years, looking back, that was exactly the moment that the Iron Curtain fell.
Yeah, that's right. I feel like there's a strong connection between those things because the people who didn't live through communism are not so cynical towards integration of European nations. And I feel like it's even stronger with the people who are born like around the year 2000 because majority of their lives were within the European Union. So they see it as something normal and something that's helping them and making their lives better.
So that's a bit different than in some Western European countries where Volt also has some members who are 60 plus, for instance?
I wouldn't say it's so different. There are also people who are like pro-European from the old generations, but they generally are from like special parts of the society. It's not as broad as, for example, in the Netherlands, but it's not just the party of the young here in Czechia, though the percentages are quite strongly moving towards the younger generations.
So I think we have 10 weeks, 11 weeks left before EU elections will pop up and we'll have to go to the ballot box. Are people interested here in Czech Republic, in your country?
Well, the people in Czechia are somewhat interested because of the security topics, like a securitization of European integration is newly quite strong in here in Czechia. Well, I mean, we are exposed to 2 years of Russian aggression. But as far as the European elections themselves, I feel like there's still a long path to go because of the turnouts in the elections. Like usually it was around 30%. And from most of the predictions, we're looking at a similar results for this year.
And what are the flavors? What kind of parties can people vote for?
Well, essentially, there's this ANO party, which is like a big populist party. I'm not able to reasonably put it on the political compass. It's just moving with what the polls are suggesting for it. Then there's this center-right coalition called SPOLU, which is sort of Eurosceptical and mostly right-wing. And somewhat conservative. Then there are the Pirates, which are quite close to Volt in terms of the positions on European integration and stuff like that, though they are not as radical. And then there's the usual colorate of Social Democrats, Greens, and also there's this Meyer Party, which is basically just a center-right-ish, more close to the center on the economic axis as well. And then there's also the extreme right, as probably everywhere in Europe right now. But funnily enough, it's quite interconnected. They have like a great relations with the Communist Party. So the horseshoe theory is working in Czechia.
And what are the main topics people are worried about? You were mentioning already security, and I can imagine that that's a topic that works well for European elections. But in a way, like looking at the Netherlands, I'm feeling like the elections might be some kind of national as well, still about economics, social economics issues. What can EU do for you? People are angry at Brussels because of agricultural policy, stuff like that. What's the situation like here in Czechia?
In all honesty, it's quite sad that migration is still among the top priorities for us, even though we had a lot of refugees from Ukraine present here, and the people who are pushing for anti-migration laws are just basically ignoring the situation with the Ukrainians. So it's quite ironic that they are using the talking points to motivate their voters. But except for that, in the socio-economic point of view, there were some farmer protests, but since the structure of Czech agriculture is quite different than in the Western Europe, I don't think they have like this big of an impact on the electorate, because not many people work in agriculture, and therefore there's not many voters interested in that. And overall, economically, I would say that people see EU as this, let's be pejorative and call it a milking cow, because they just see it as the Eurofans. And some of the parties are just like saying that they're going to bring in even more money that the other parties were bringing in the past.
There's a big difference, if I remember correctly, the Euro barometers. There's a big difference if you look at the support for the EU in Czech Republic or in Poland, for instance. Why are people in Czech Republic quite skeptical towards EU?
I mean, I would say they are not totally skeptical, they are just totally pragmatic. Like, they see it just as the Eurofans, and then they don't see it as anything more. Like, they are just focusing on the economic part, though they are overseeing the positive aspects for the students, for the traveling, for everything, even for the security itself. They are just like... not really understand, like, majority of the people, sadly, are not really understanding the all impacts of European integration on their lives. So I feel like it's just a misunderstanding of the concept.
You were mentioning the pirates. I think for people who don't follow Czech Republic that closely, who don't watch it that closely, it's interesting that they are really on board here in Czech Republic. Look at the Netherlands. We have parliamentary members of Volt. We don't have pirates in the parliament. Here it's the other way around. You even have a minister for foreign affairs who's a pirate. Previous mayor here in Prague was a pirate. What's their secret? And can you learn from them, since Volt is, well, it's much more a pan-European movement, but it has some similarities. Let's wait for the police car. Bye-bye. What can you tell me about this?
Well, essentially, I feel like the difference between how pirates succeeded here and not succeeded in the Western countries is that because they were just running on this platform of being anti-establishment, so they are just running against the governments. But since they are part of the government, they are sort of circling in this role, and they are not certain how to exactly approach the elections without being the anti-establishment. So I'm not sure whether we should learn from them in this sense, because being anti-establishment is somewhat not sustainable strategy.
Yeah.
But I would say that definitely we have some motivation to get inspired by the topics they were pushing, because those were somewhat successful with the Czech population.
So you mean that you notice here in the Pirate Party that they're not following their principles anymore, they're not a one-issue party anymore, which is maybe not a bad thing, but they're focusing on so many aspects that they kind of forget what their reasons were to be part of politics. And you, as Volt, that would be one of the most important things to remember always, why you were erected and why you entered Czech politics, because of this pan-European characteristics. So you're saying that the Pirate Party is not concerned anymore about digital transformation or privacy, and they're focusing on all the other elements but forgetting about their history, their past?
I wouldn't say they are fully forgetting it, but during the last meeting of the overall party in Czechia, they are thinking about changing their name to being like a liberal center party from the pirates. So they are just moving towards being the government party for like the progressive voters, for the more liberal parts of the society, but they are still keeping some parts of their original ideas, but they are just drowning in the other stuff that's also important for them as the members of the government.
You have a big issue with mass tourism, right? So we hear all the strollers here, same as in Amsterdam.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you live in Prague for long enough, you start to somewhat dislike tourists, because they are just, you know, there's too many of them. And I feel like we're slowly approaching the situation that Venice is having, where they regulate tourism because there's just too many people in there.
Yeah. That's also something that could be done European-wide, learn from each other. You know, Amsterdam, Dubrovnik, Prague, Barcelona all have the same issues.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, like I said at the beginning with the cars, like, that's something we should probably learn from the Western capitals, like basically to use the streets for the people and not for the cars, because the amount of space that's being used for the cars right now is unsustainable. And even having a highway through the heart of the city, that's urbanistically just a sin, I would say. So we should definitely learn some lessons from our Western chapters, as far as world goes, and try to implement some sufficient ideas for bettering the life of Czech citizens.
What are your expectations for the EU elections coming up?
You mean in terms of us? Well, realistically, we're looking at success being 2% of the vote, which would get us government funding, but there's still the non-zero chance of us getting over the 5% threshold and having MEP voted.
Okay, so this means that if you will get 2%, that you get funding and it makes you a stronger party in the future, so you can build on that.
Well, to be exact, the threshold for the funding is 1%, but since there's this coefficient of basically getting, I think it was 50 or 30 crowns per one vote, then to just return the amount of money we invested in the campaign, the 2% threshold would be sufficient for that, just to have the one-for-one investment and the returns. But since the campaign is going to give us more visibility, and if we would get the money back to invest into other campaigns, it would be a nice step up for the whole party here in Czechia.
How do you campaign here? Grassrooting, digital? Do you have a main focus on Prague and Brno because rural areas are not really your business?
Well, funnily enough, I'm from a rural area. I actually live in a village, so the whole village is voting for us.
You're looking really angry at me now.
Yeah, right. I mean, I would say that the majority of our potential electorate is from the larger cities, like you said, from Prague or Brno. But for example, we have a regional chapter in Karlovy Vary, which is like the westernmost region, and those regions are like the periphery. So even though it's the periphery of the country, there are still people who are seeing the European potential, and especially for them, since they are so close to Germany, it makes even more sense with the cross-border cooperation with the Bavarian and Saxony chapters of Wald. So there's this motivation of working together even in the rural areas, like you said.
I'm very sorry for my remark.
No, that's all right. I mean, it makes sense that usually the liberal voters are in the big cities and not in the countryside.
One more thing I want to address to you. Are a defense man, defense and security man. European defense, it's in the spotlights again after Russia started the war in Ukraine. We see Czechia, especially under President Pavel, taking the stage. Is this something you can use during the Volt campaign here? Does it work that way?
Essentially, yes, because it's one of the top priorities of our program. And since there's a lot of defense companies and a lot of industry here in Czechia, there's a strong motivation of the people to retain this industry through the production of arms. So therefore, just economically, not just security-wise, but even economically, it makes sense for the voters. And therefore, we have some success with communicating with the general population that this is actually good for them.
And people sometimes forget that if you're in favor of enhancing European defense or giving Ukraine more possibilities or capabilities, it doesn't mean that you're not a strong supporter of a better Czech defense. It's plus, 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 right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, if we get the production capabilities, we can not only support Ukraine, but we can also be stronger ourselves, because last week I wrote an article opinion piece for one of the journals here in Czechia, and I was showcasing how the common European defense would actually save us a lot of money and make us more efficient, because if we compare the European Union to the United States, we have essentially the same amount of armed forces, like the personnel, but the investment per one person is much smaller. So therefore, the efficiency which would be available with more integration would not only make us better off economically, but also would increase our security as well.
One more question about Ukraine and the shells and President Pavel supporting Ukraine by, well, traveling the world, sailing the seas and trying to get a lot of ammunition for Ukraine. This story got a lot of attention in the Netherlands as well. Do you know what the situation is like? What are people writing about? What are they gossiping about? Is it really the next big thing for Ukraine, or is it a little bit out of proportion if you look at the PR that, yeah, you know what I mean?
I mean, honestly, I would say that the PR exploded much more than it actually should have. Then there's a huge hype around that. But I would say that it's one of the bigger things for Ukraine this year, because a lot of the support dried up. So therefore, this large package of ammunition could really help them out to defend. But like I said at the beginning, the PR took over, and therefore the proportions of the project are sort of being communicated a bit too much in contrast to how much is being done.
It became the holy grail for Ukraine, but it did not arrive yet, and the question is also what quality the shells will be.
Yes, that's always the issue with searching for the ammunition in the third world, and just looking for the historical supplies which were brought there in, for example, the 70s and the 80s, because we're looking at 122 millimeter artillery shells, which are quite historical. But even though there are these remarks towards the shells, I still think it's a good thing for Ukraine, and it's extremely good thing for Czech diplomacy, because we're finally moving towards the Western perspective we somewhat forgot during the last government and the last presidency.
But the shells are old. They can blow up the Panzerhaubitzer if they're using them.
Well, the bigger probability is that they won't explode at all. So you're just shooting chunks of metal at the enemy, which do nothing. So the risk is more in them not exploding than destroying the howitzers themselves. But there's also this risk, and essentially, in this situation, Ukrainians just have to take the risk, because if there are no other shells, you just have to use the ones that are available.
Your president is pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I mean, he brought back the prestige to the presidency.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Adam. And yeah, I wish you all the best for the EU elections coming up. You'll be campaigning here on this square, or a lot of young people, or mainly tourists, I think, not your crowd.
Well, even tourists are our crowd, because we can campaign for vote in other European countries. And it's super funny to just campaign in the streets and see a tourist, and they're like, no, I'm not from here, don't give me the leaflets. And we're like, where are you from? And if the person is from the EU, we're just like, no, we have leaflets for you as well.
Thanks again, and yeah, good luck with everything.
Ja, thank you for me.
Dat was dus Adam Ruschka. Normaal zou ik nu zeggen, dit was Volt op vrijdag, tot volgende week. Tot vrijdag. Maar ik heb je twee podcasts beloofd. En dat betekent dat ik dus mag zeggen, tot vandaag.
Ook Diana Matroos vind je in de BNR-app. Ja, inderdaad. Je kunt live naar mij luisteren tijdens de Big Five. Ook handig in de BNR-app. Breaking nieuwsmeldingen, maar ook het allerlaatste zakelijke nieuws. En je vindt in de app alle BNR-podcasts, waaronder Wetenschap Vandaag. Download nu de gratis BNR-app en blijf scherp.